From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 85 with guest Ian McDonald, recorded Wednesday, November 5th, 2008. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com.
You're listening to Run As Radio. I'm your host, Richard Campbell. With me, as always, my co-host, Greg Hughes.
Hey, everybody. Richard, how are you?
I'm good. It's the end of the second day. Well, it's really kind of the first day of Tech Ed. We're still sitting in the community lounge. It's a little more quiet here, just a bit of conversation going on. It's been a real zoo all day, though. We've been down here the whole day.
Yeah, it's nice and quiet now. The background noise for this particular show is not quite as high.
Yeah, I think the other show we recorded, there was actually a panel discussion going on the other side of the wall from us, and it was loud.
Yeah, I think there's been times we have events overlapping each other, announcements overlapping events, but that's all part of a live show.
And it's been good fun, too. So we have a very special guest with us. He's shaved in everything.
Allegedly.
General Manager of Windows Server, Ian McDonald.
Hi there. How you
Sir.
Doing?
It's a pleasure to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
And you've certainly been around Microsoft for some time now.
I've been at Microsoft 17 years, which just appalls me every time I say it. But I started in product support in Microsoft Australia in 1991.
Wow.
So there you go.
So that's
answering the phones.
Windows for work groups.
No, actually, I was doing it was just after Microsoft had acquired a company called Consumer Software. And I was the mail guy. Oh, the email guy, and I was like the only one in the country, and we actually had down there the biggest deal that Microsoft had sold at the time, and I was the whipping boy for that.
Oh, what fun.
Yeah,
and somehow you eventually ended up in Redmond.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I will say that Alex Hinrichs, who works for me, who's the director of program management for Windows Server, has in his office quite proudly displayed a Windows for Work Group screwdriver, collector's edition.
No kidding.
I'm sure that you can get them on eBay and they cost a ridiculous amount of money.
That's great swag.
Yeah.
We made a screwdriver. I got a Leatherman a while ago, but you don't see just a plain old screwdriver that
often
anymore.
Well, it came in the box.
Right.
Yeah, because they had a net card in there and it came in the box. And I think that, if I remember rightly, they actually called it Windows for Warehouses because nobody ever bought it. But you know,
I did a lot of work group installations on ArcNet, you know, and Thick
just,
Ether.
It's dating yourself.
Oh,
that is.
Geez, yeah, it's a shame.
Yeah. Well, the one that at the time, I did a bunch of things down there, down Australia. And one of the things I did is I trained up a whole bunch of people who work for resellers on, you know, what this product was, and we had two labs down there, and one of them was an Ethernet lab, and the other one was like coax. It was a total pain.
It was IBM had a TwinAx set up like that. That was it was a bear.
I just remember one of the guys I worked with had to reconfigure the network one night, and he's pulled an overnighter, and he still didn't get it working. And I turn up at like 7 o'clock in the morning, and we're sort of pulling our hair out for another hour and a bit to actually get it finally done.
Find what you hadn't terminated or wasn't quite crimped properly.
Exactly.
Or,
exactly. Yeah, I'd rather have a fork in my eye than ever deal with that again.
And somehow now you're the server team. I mean, you've always stuck around Windows to some degree.
Well, I did. I moved over. I was in product support in the States. There was three of us that were made escalation engineer originally.
Oh, yeah.
And the first group of those. So there was a guy named Dave McDonald, and a guy named Daryl Wiley, and me. And Dave and Daryl are actually in the Windows overall Windows group these days, so it's kind of funny that all those three guys are together again. But I did that, and then I went to the Exchange group. I did the last versions of MS Mail. Anybody ever used that?
Yeah.
And then I worked on the original version of Exchange, a couple of that, did some other stuff. I went to Windows. I was a project manager for Windows 2000, just this little thing that maybe you've heard of.
Yeah, once or twice.
Yeah, and then I had the project management group for XP in 2003 report to me. And then after we did that, kind of I'd gone through doing enough of that, and I decided to, you know, go over to the server group and own program management over there, and I did that for a couple of years, and now I'm the GM.
Oh, wow.
There you go.
That's the whole gambit.
That was basically, that's all my life summarized. Last 17 years summarized in a couple of minutes.
Yeah, no
a couple
kidding.
Of seconds. There you
yeah.
go.
So Windows 2008 has been a smash hit.
We're very happy. I was always very happy with that release. I always thought that we were doing the right thing. I always felt like we had a lot of the right focus. I actually think that we built off a lot of the things we'd learnt in 2003.
Sure.
I think that the R2 upgrade, you know, the R2 upgrade, some people are like, it's not got much features and all that sort of stuff. It was popular because there were features that people wanted.
Yeah.
And it was compatible and all that sort of stuff. It also proved that we could go and do this sort of regular cadence of releases, and you know that we'd have the idea of a minor release. 2008, there's a bunch of really good stuff in there, and we, you know, like here's the stat that if you're me, you really care about.
Right.
6 months after release, and I'm waiting for the update, but someone's being slow with the update. 6 months after release, we had done 15% more sales than the equivalent number of sales for Windows Server 2003.
Okay.
But our support calls were a third.
That's a good
so
stat.
That is the sort of stat that if you're me, you want to see every time.
Yeah.
So we're very happy about doing the things of keeping the quality up, keeping the functionality and having something that people actually want. And so we're doing an update in the beginning of 2010 called Server 2008 R2, which is another minor release, and
right.
So keeping that cadence going up. And I actually think it's going to be a release that surprises a couple of people. It's going to be interesting.
And we're talking still a year away then.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, but 2008 is brand new, and it just gives us something to look forward to rather than having to wait for another entire version of Windows.
When we're going to keep with this, you know, this is a pretty consistent thing. We're looking at what we do further out and what are the sort of capabilities people want further out and the sort of wild off in the future sort of timeline. And, you know, we're still, you know, you got to, when you have a business that's the size of something like Windows Server,
sure,
you got to go and sort of say, well, you know, here's our roadmap and our roadmap's going to continue.
Yeah, you don't want to surprise. There's an awful lot of people that make Windows successful, both within Microsoft and outside of Microsoft. I guess you've got to give it a heads-up time.
I hope that we can surprise people. I think the things that we can continue to surprise people about is, you know, like people haven't needed the there's a gun going off in the background,
I'm sure. Shooting at you.
Yeah, that's right. You know, people haven't had to wait around for the first service pack for the last couple of releases. You know, I think that surprised people. The interesting thing, that the actually one of the other best things I heard is I was talking to a group, and this guy said to me, you know, you've proven that I don't have to wait for the first service pack to come out, and you've proven that you can actually get regular. My problem is you're giving me too much stuff too quickly. And I'm like, every time, I want the choice. If I can be a pain in your...
Yeah.
Can I say ass?
Yeah, absolutely.
If I can be a pain in your ass by giving you too much good stuff too quickly, that's my choice.
That's what you want to do every
that's
time.
That's what I want to be known for.
No kidding. Yeah. So what do we? How much can you talk about for R2? What are we getting?
We can talk a little bit.
Okay.
We can talk a little bit. So the things are where, you know, like, frankly, if anybody's gone and read any of the sort of noise, you know, if you've gone to Paul Thurrott's scurrilous rumor site, you know, you probably got most of this stuff anyway. So he's just a rumor monger. He really is.
He's good at it, is he?
You know, the sort of things that we're been working on. We've got an update to the hypervisor. We think that, you know, the virtualization business is an interesting thing at the moment. However, I believe that, you know, talking about something as mundane as a hypervisor is kind of a semi-boring thing.
Sure.
You know, there's some great technology and there's some great things we're looking at there. The real thing is how we can manage it, how we can go and manage resources, how we can go and look at physical, virtual, you know, that movement between physical and virtual. be able to go and look at the full stack, be able to go and say, in this VM, I've got this application doing X and Y, and be able to understand that full stack. That's really sort of key sort of stuff. And so we've got an update to the hypervisor in the boring sort of end of the world. We're doing things like live migration, which gives you the ability to be able to go and move a VM very quickly from one hypervisor host to another, as opposed to something like quick migration, which means you commit it to disk between going there.
And it's just that little blink in the trip.
Yeah, as opposed to sort of an 18-second blink.
Yeah.
I couldn't do that.
I've had those blinks. It's usually jet lag.
What would you do if I sat here for, like, we sat here for 18 seconds and said nothing? It'd be, you get a lot of, that dead or air thing.
Yeah, people hitting their Zooms saying, what's wrong with this thing?
That's right. Well, actually, what you'd hear is loud people in the background, loud English people. Other stuff that we're doing, we're really... Today we have a limit of 64 hardware threads,
right?
Which means that if you have an eight-way system, or you're hitting the limits,
right?
Or and we know there are designs coming along that have more processors in them, and
the number of cores is only going up.
Yeah, and the commoditization of that sort of hardware is rapidly increasing, and so we know that we're going to have to go and sort of make those sort of capabilities available to people on commodity hardware. So we're blowing off the limit of hardware threads on the system. The cool thing is that we're going to, we're looking at 256 at the moment. You know, obviously that's dependent on us seeing hardware and all that sort of stuff. And then the design will go much bigger than that. Sorry, I'm just handing something to someone.
Yeah.
So that'll we definitely think that there's, for the sort of workloads that require that, big SAP databases,
sure.
Big databases.
You're talking about a very core. This is about as deep into the kernel as you can get. Your thread limits.
That's
not trivial stuff.
I mean, Mark Rozinovich actually had a pretty good talk on, can I say channel9.msdn.com?
Yeah, sure,
okay. Channel9.msdn.com. Mark Rozinovich actually had a good talk about that and talked about the sort of details. Like if you really want to go into the sort of mundane things, we can talk about the dispatcher lock. It's a conversation that we can talk for hours about it.
Yeah, and very key to everything everybody does. But I mean, I think one of the reasons most people don't know anything about it is they don't need to.
That's right. It's one of the sort of core things in Windows that you never really had to see. But the dispatcher lock is actually now removed, and it allows us to be able to go and get that scale up.
That's awesome stuff. Mm. But is it really, this is what it's all going to be about, is we're focusing on the biggest machine you've ever seen, massively parallel?
I actually believe in a scale-out world, and I believe in being able to go and say, I don't actually believe in single node anymore. I think that what you really want to be able to go and do is say you have a certain amount of capability, you have a certain amount of system resources or resources you can go and give to a service, and as you need to, you can provision the right sort of things. And,
sure.
I think that especially as you talk to people with larger data centers and things like that, moving off the single node administration to, say, a rack level administration is actually kind of a pretty huge leap.
Yeah.
The leap from there to administration of some larger representation, a set of racks, the rackable has the container sort of things, to that sort of level is an interesting thing.
It's another jump. Then we make the whole thing blurrier by calling it cloud and being indistinct on what the machines are.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the interesting question or the interesting sort of discussion I have is, the cloud representation, whether you run it or whether someone else run it, is it all that important?
No, in the end, it doesn't matter. There's still an OS in there somewhere, and it's all in how they get along with each other.
Yeah, well, it's all about management at some point. Yeah. It's sort of the fabric that you manage.
Yeah, that is the challenging part. I mean, from an IT point of view, it's just, what do I got to do to manage this? How do I make it symmetrical?
I think that there are two or three things there. One is, does the server business get more interesting over the years? Yeah, hell yeah.
Yes.
And there's some room for some really big science things, and so and there will be continue. And you know, if you do, there's like the HPC stuff over there. HPC is just like it's a space that is just so cool. There's so many cool things, and
yeah.
people are doing so many cool things, and we've got some really nice things coming along that we'll be talking about in the next couple of months in that sort of space. But they're doing some stuff that's really big science.
Sure.
I think that you know what our traditional idea of what an IT person will change. I do think that the job of someone who is an operator will change
sure.
pretty significantly, and I think that the sort of things that they'll be asked to do will be much harder, but will be kind of more fun. You know, the thing for me is finding ways to remove the mundane tasks.
That sort of grunt work of, I got to change the rules on all these users, or
yeah,
I've got to go inventory this infrastructure.
Yeah.
That stuff can be automated, can be made
and
simpler.
And so, like coming back on Server 2008 R2, PowerShell 2.0 and the embedding of that and being able to go and put it across on a server core and being able to put it all the way across, I think that actually allows us to be able to go and say, well, this node doesn't need special treatment and you can go and do things in an automated way all the way across things and blah 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 blah.
When I found that quote about a year ago, you're talking about PowerShell could become the GUI of Windows.
Yeah, I kind of said that to please Jeffrey Snover. The real thing there is that if you go and say that it can be easily invoked.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to force something on everybody, especially something that has a little bit of footprint. You know, PowerShell has a .NET framework dependency, so
yeah.
has a little bit of footprint. I don't want to do that. I always want to be able to go and say that Windows is as thin a layer as you want.
Yes.
You know, the thing could provide some more services if you need them, or if you want to pull them out, you could. And every time we want to sort of go and put the base sort of system on more and more of a diet on every release, make more things that are in the base system optional, and you know, continue down that path. And to that end, in Server 08, one of the things we're doing, Server 08 R2, one of the things we're doing is on a server core installation, the 32-bit compatibility layer, which is called WoW 64,
right.
will be an optional install.
Wow.
So that's like another 300 megs worth of stuff.
Just that much thinner.
Yeah, well, you know, like the thing is that most setup programs use 32 bits and blah, blah, blah. We've got some things that we have to worry about there. But, you know, giving you the ability to be able to have it there, install it, remove it.
Yeah, I can see. Putting it in, doing an installation because the MSI installer is 32-bit, getting that 64-bit add up, then pulling the WoW back out again just to keep yourself lean, makes for a very tight install.
Yeah, and then if you go and do some other things we're doing, you know, you'll be able to then go and make your image and your apps on there. You'd be able to go and do something like an offline domain join. So, bang, you got the machine in the right sort of management place. And if you want, you can put it in a VHD format, and you'll be able to physically boot VHDs as well as run them in a virtual environment. So mm-hmm. you've got one image, whether it's physical or virtual.
It works exactly the same way.
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
well, you know, like if it's running physically, it needs to have a couple more things. It's going to need to have the driver model there.
Yeah.
But if it's running virtually, it doesn't need to.
Yeah, all that
But
stuff
it could be the same format if you want. You know?
No, I see where you're going with this, that it gets very clean.
And XCopy deployment is like a fabulous thing as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
You know, I can understand XCopy. All this other stuff I can't understand. Yeah.
It's familiar for you.
Well, if you speak to anybody who works for me, they'll tell you that I'm one of the more ADD people in the world. And if we get into the details of setup programs, I start losing it. So, you know.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Any other tidbits we can have from R2?
What did we talk about before?
Now, what about Active Directory? Are there any improvements in Active Directory in R2?
Active Directory. The management tools are awesome in Active Directory and Windows Server 2008 R2. Anybody who is an Active Directory admin is going to want to give the Active Directory team a big kiss. And there's going to be some other little features. If you go to Forest Mode, the Server 2008 R2 Forest Mode, you'll have things like the ability to be able to undelete stuff and be able to revert your dumb mistakes, which...
You have some experience with that.
Yeah, I have some experience, but that's a whole different story.
It is a whole different story. What about the Active Directory Administrator? What is it that they're going to love so much?
Well, the basis will be everything will be PowerShell enabled underneath. So there's a framework that'll be sitting there, and then... there'll just be a lot more ability to be able to automate up their tasks and be able to go and just focus on the workflow of the things that they need to.
Great. No, don't have to do all those repetitive tasks over
and
over.
Well, you'll be able
again.
To automate it. Right. Anything you want.
I'm still getting my head around using PowerShell on Active Directory to do a bunch of that management, so I can just do it at the command line level.
Well, you could do it at the command line level, or you could use the UI, which underneath it does it all. Just tipping our hand there, the Exchange 2007 admin stuff actually went and did that.
Yeah, I think they really paved, them and the IIS7 guys really paved the way for...
Yeah,
In the end, it's actually all PowerShell under the hood.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think that's the way it should be.
Yeah.
Opens up the opportunity for third parties also to build new management UIs and platforms and what have to be able to do the specific things.
Frankly, I would love for someone to go and... create something that scares the hell out of us. I'm serious. I think that, giving people, if we give people the ability to be able to go and have the best, Lego set or Meccano set or whatever you want to call it, and they do something that surprises us, that's the fun thing. That's the sort of thing that keeps me coming. Every time I meet customers who go and do things that fundamentally break our system to make them great, that's the sort of thing that keeps me coming back. That's the best thing because, it's sort of admitting or getting to a point where you admit that, maybe some people are a bit smarter than us about this or something,
Kind of curious, why did you do Server Core? What are the real reasons behind Server Core?
I wanted to make Andrew Mason happy. No, that was kind of one of the reasons. We had this effort for a long while about componentization of the system. And there'd been a number of efforts that had come along. I think that a lecture from a guy named Eric Trout was out on the net at one stage where he talked about a thing called MinWin, which was our internal representation of the minimal sort of set of stuff that you could go and boot. Yeah. And we sort of wanted to take a more sort of pragmatic approach to it, which is, how can we reduce the base of the system? How can we go and make it a minimal set of stuff, reduce the servicing footprint, be able to go and sort of use less resources, hopefully eventually use less power in the system, all that sort of stuff. And there's something for me that's very interesting around the idea of going and saying, you've got something that's got tremendous capability, but all the things that you provide... Or you could configure the system to have only the things that you need,
right?
And be able to remove all the extra stuff, And if you have, I believe that there's a certain level of system maturity where you get through where you go and say that, you've gone through the point where you've gone and turned all the crap on, I look back at Windows 2000 and I remember it was my fault that IIS was on by default. It was my fault. I wouldn't take the change to turn it off by default. It was dumb. It was the dumbest decision, or it's one of the dumbest decisions I've ever made. It was only a couple of billion dollars that it probably affected, but I learned something a couple of years ago. I was speaking to a lawyer friend of mine. He said, you could get sued for that. And I'm like, really? And he's like, but my questions about being sued are, one, do you own a plane? And two, if yes, can you stand up on it? Up in it? And if you can't answer yes to both those questions, you really won't be sued. So that was what one of the lawyers actually said. A friend of mine. Really, I think that, when you have a look at the long-term effects of us going and creating a system where there was too much stuff turned on, it really was a mistake. So there's sort of something interesting about going and creating something that is as small as possible and but still provides a tremendous sort of base for people to be able to go and use.
Sure. I mean, get great functionality out of a small resource overhead. Yeah. You're also reducing the attack surface.
Well, it's not only the attack surface, the amount of stuff you have to push out, stuff you have to manage, stuff you have to be aware of, blah, blah, blah.
Absolutely. So what is new as far as server core goes in R2?
.NET on server core.
Which is a big
deal. And therefore PowerShell, and therefore ASP.NET, and therefore lots of loveliness.
And we got IIS 7 on server core.
So we did IIS 7 on server core with Server 2008, but this time we didn't do ASP.NET. So this time we've done ASP.NET on it. So. Great.
So that now is going to be the reference standard for a good web farm. That's the sort of leanest, meanest configuration we could have.
That's kind of what we hope.
Yeah.
You know, I really think that it makes a lot of sense to do
that. It's an area I've done lots of work in, so I'm looking forward to really taking that out for a spin and making it work hard for me.
Yeah. We've been looking at it in a big way, and we just think that it just makes a lot of sense. There's some other cool stuff that's coming along, too. You know, like I think the media service spot was one that was kind of a little, seen as sort of over or something like that for the last couple of years. And there's some really cool stuff I just saw before I came down here. I just saw John, who's one of the guys who works on the media service, show me some stuff about HD streaming and being able to go and do, you know, the right thing to stream down to an endpoint user. And it was really, really cool. It was way beyond what we've actually had in the past.
Wow. And it's funny because that's sort of like a flash from the past. That was very much a .com boom thing, doing all that streaming media stuff.
Yeah, it was.
It's like it's come back again.
Well, I think that you know, as we look at, you know, the sort of stuff that people want now, there's a lot more sort of podcasting or video casting,
sure,
and all that sort of stuff. And people are actually going and finding the usefulness of doing that, rather than, I think in the past, people just sort of did it for no good reason.
Yeah, they just did it to try it. Now we're finally getting to a point where we've got the bandwidth and the resources to really handle those big volumes.
Yep.
Well, I think we're coming about to the end of the show here. Any final words, stuff we should make sure people are focused on? Apparently, if I want the truth, I just go talk to Paul Theriot.
Yeah, well, allegedly, you know, like Paul is a legend in his own time, own lunchtime. He'll take that quote from me, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
We'll have a beta coming out in early next year. People go and have a look at it. It's fun. You
take
know,
it for
Server
a spin.
2008's out there. We're happy with the release. We're not forcing it. We're not putting a gun to anybody's head to go and upgrade. But hopefully, we're going to give them capabilities that will
make them want to move.
Make them want to move.
Yeah.
And that's my whole thing. I don't want to go and sort of, you know, even though I must be fundamentally evil being a Microsoft employee, I don't think that we need to. I think if we go and produce great capabilities, people will move to the latest version.
Sure. I agree.
And that's, you know, that's the thing.
Ian McDonald, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, fellas. Hola. Hola from Barcelona.
We'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.